Hi, and welcome to the Magazine Rack. I'm Chris. I'm Michael Prinz. Today, I'll be reading from Kiplinger Personal Finance, the July edition. The first article today is written by Sandra Block, titled Where the Dollar is Strong. If you've always wanted to go on a safari or climb Mount Fuji, this may be the year to plan your trip. Earlier this year, many analysts predicted the U.S. dollar would weaken in 2024, based on expectations that the Federal Reserve would cut interest rates several times this year. But continued economic growth and lingering inflation have led economists to revise those forecasts. Because consumer prices in the first quarter were stronger than expected, Kiplinger forecasts that the Fed will postpone an interest rate cut until its November meeting. High interest rates make investments in treasury bonds more attractive to global investors, increasing the value of the dollar against foreign currencies. That won't save you money if you plan to visit Yosemite this summer, but in countries where the dollar is particularly muscular, you can enjoy luxury accommodations and gourmet food for a fraction of what it would cost in the U.S. If you're contemplating an overseas vacation during the summer or the fall shoulder season, consider these destinations. Japan. Japan is surprisingly affordable because of the strength of the dollar against the yen. In a country that's normally thought of as a pricey one, that can make all the difference in the world, says Tim Leffel, author of The World's Cheapest Destinations and founder of the Cheapest Destinations blog, www.cheapestdestinationsblog.com. If you've been wanting to go to Japan, this is a great year to do it. While Tokyo has a reputation as a high-cost city, there are plenty of deals to be had for American tourists. For example, a visit to the Shinjuku Gyoen National Garden, where you can see Japan's iconic cherry blossoms, costs about $3.25. South Korea. This country offers a long list of low-cost activities and attractions made even more affordable by an extremely favorable exchange rate for U.S. tourists. The Discover Seoul Pass, which costs the equivalent of about $30 a day or $52 for 3 days, offers more than 200 deals, including admission to Gyeongbokgung Palace, built 6 centuries ago by the Joseon Dynasty. South Africa. U.S. travelers to this country, which features world-renowned vineyards, spectacular scenery, and safaris in Kruger National Park, can enjoy luxury accommodations at budget prices, says Michael Sode, co-founder and CEO of Travel Insider, www.travelinsider.com, which provides travel advice and curated travel guides. You can enjoy a meal at a Michelin-starred restaurant for about 30% the cost of fine dining in New York City, says Sode, who traveled to South Africa recently. If casual dining is more your style, you can get a pint of beer for about $1. Flights to South Africa can be pricey, but here's a pro tip. Get the cheapest direct flight to any city in South Africa, even if it's not your preferred destination. Internal flights between cities are extremely cheap, Sode says, so it's much less expensive to fly direct and book a local flight to a city you want to visit instead of booking a connecting flight from the U.S. South America. Buenos Aires has often been referred to as the Paris of South America, and the favorable exchange rate makes it much cheaper to visit than the capital of France. A persistent financial crisis has depressed the value of Argentina's peso, so your dollar will go very far there. Sode says you can get even better deals by paying in cash with U.S. dollars, because dollars are prized in Argentina. But if you're not comfortable carrying cash around, you can still benefit from the exchange rate by using your credit card. Peru, home to the 15th century Inca citadel of Machu Picchu, and Colombia, where a meal costs about $3, also offers discounts for American tourists. Eastern Europe. The dollar-to-euro exchange rate isn't bad now, although it's not as favorable as when it was in 2022, when the euro briefly dropped below parity with the U.S. dollar. But if you really want to save money, head east. Bulgaria, which features historic city centers and beaches along the Black Sea, has always been a bargain, and the strong dollar has made it even more affordable, with low-cost accommodations, $2 glasses of wine, and train rides available for about $6. In Budapest, the capital of Hungary, you can find numerous hotels and Airbnb rentals for about $40 per night. Southeast Asia. With the exception of Singapore, all of Southeast Asia is extremely affordable, Leffel says. Vietnam is home to 8 UNESCO World Heritage Sites, has great food, and is a good value for your dollar. Thailand also offers strong values for U.S. tourists, says Leffel. Thailand is one of the best deals in the world for lodging, he says. You can get a really nice hotel for $100 to $150 a night. And above that in a gray box is get the best exchange rate. Use a credit card that doesn't charge foreign transaction fees. Capital One and Discover don't charge the fees with any of the cards they offer. Other card issuers waive the fees with certain travel-focused cards. For a rundown of Kiplinger's favorite travel reward cards, see kiplinger.com/KPF/travel cards. Don't exchange money at the airport. Airport kiosks typically charge high exchange rates and fees. Withdrawals from major banks' ATMs at your destination will provide a much better rate. Ask to pay in local currency. Some merchants will offer you the option to have purchases charged in U.S. dollars. Don't fall for it. Paying in the local currency nearly always offers a better deal. Next on page 12, we have an interview with Bridget Weston. Bridget Weston is CEO of SCORE, a nonprofit organization that provides volunteer mentors, online courses, and workshops for established and aspiring small business owners. More women than ever are starting businesses. Retail and travel businesses, along with health, beauty, and fitness, are popular with women entrepreneurs. Now to the interview. Your research shows a 21% increase in small businesses owned by women in the past 5 years. What accounts for this trend? The COVID-19 pandemic opened up new opportunities for business owners and increased the number of people looking to start a business. Women are jumping in to fill gaps and needs in their communities while supporting their families. This growth is reflected in the increasing number of women seeking guidance for their business ventures. 64% of SCORE clients are women, up from 60% 2 years ago. For example, with help from SCORE mentor Suvendu Ray, Tonia Smith of Seattle created a gluten-free, wood-fired pizza crust that is partially baked, frozen, and sold to hotels and restaurants. She's currently working on co-branding with Hormel Foods to expand into the frozen pizza industry. What types of industries are attracting women entrepreneurs? 21% of women-owned small businesses are in retail, followed by 15% in health, beauty, and fitness, according to Guidant Financial. Women-owned businesses in the hotel and travel industry are growing at a faster rate than the national average. Listings of women-owned businesses on Yelp in that sector grew by 44% in 2023, according to Axios. An example of this trend is Fran Hassing of Island Park, Idaho. As she approached retirement following a career in the medical field and education, she opened Hassing Hillside Hideaway, a short-term cabin rental with views of the Rocky Mountains. What challenges do women entrepreneurs face that male entrepreneurs don't necessarily encounter? Women in this country and the world in general are still looked at as the primary caregivers for children or elderly parents. Childcare, in particular, generally contributes to the overall workload that a woman carries while also running a business. It can be daunting to focus on the things you need to do to make your business successful. SCORE mentors help women set realistic goals, not just for their business, but for life, which means figuring out time management, setting priorities, and saying no to things. Is obtaining financing more difficult for women entrepreneurs? SCORE recently held a webinar about finance opportunities for women business owners, and it was one of the top 3 webinars we've ever held. Our data shows that women aren't receiving less funding, but they ask for it less often, and therefore more of the funding pie is going to men. SCORE can help women develop a pitch to make sure they get the financing they need. We can also help a woman figure out the right source of funding. Sometimes loans make perfect sense. Other times, financing is available from grants or angel investors. What other challenges do women entrepreneurs face, and how does SCORE help? We've seen an increase in questions about hiring. For example, does it make sense to contract with a vendor or hire employees to work in-house? One of the things we look at is the culture you're trying to build in the business, your long-term goal, and even your exit strategy. Our volunteers can also help with things such as finding a location for a store, figuring out pricing for goods or services, and determining the product selection. With help from SCORE, mentor Steve Wolfson, who has more than 40 years of experience in retail, Lori Thompson of Philadelphia, started Vera Doyle, a boutique that features home decor, jewelry, books, and body care items sourced from women-owned businesses and artists. Next, at the top of page 14, we have, can buy now, pay later plans help you build credit? BNPL has become an increasingly popular way to buy everything from shoes to airline tickets, and some loans are starting to show up on credit reports. Article by Ashlyn Brooks. Apple recently announced that loans made through its Buy Now, Pay Later program will be reported to Experian, a major credit reporting company. If more lenders follow Apple's lead, the change could help consumers who use these loans build a credit history. But it could hurt their credit scores too. BNPL services allow consumers to spread payments on their purchases over a few weeks or months, typically without interest if payments are made on time. Unlike layaway plans of the past, which required buyers to wait to claim a purchase until they have paid it off, BNPL provides instant gratification, which has made the loans popular with consumers. More than 40% of U.S. adults have used at least one BNPL service, according to a survey by Bankrate. However, the simplicity of BNPL plans can obscure potential pitfalls. Fees for late payments can be steep, and consumer advocates worry that the easy availability of the loans encourages consumers to purchase things they can't afford. Nearly 30% of consumers who have used BNPL said they have spent more than they should, according to the Bankrate survey. Because BNPL payments usually aren't reported to the three major credit reporting companies, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion, consumers have less incentive to curb spending and pay on time. Although if you fail to pay for an extended period, the BNPL provider may turn your debt over to a debt collector, which can heavily damage your credit. At the same time, with most BNPL providers, using your loan responsibly doesn't help you build a good credit history. So far, most other BNPL providers, including Klarna and Afterpay, haven't announced plans to report their loans to the credit reporting companies. Affirm says it reports some longer-term loans to Experian, but it doesn't report its plans that offer 4 interest-free payments, a common BNPL structure. In addition, most credit scoring models haven't adapted to incorporate the way BNPL payments are made. For example, unlike credit card payments, which are typically made once a month and are reported to the credit reporting companies, many BNPL borrowers make small bi-weekly payments, while Apple BNPL payments will appear on Experian credit reports, the information won't be factored into borrowers' credit scores, Experian says. And a credit score is a key measure that lenders use to judge a potential borrower's credit worthiness for a credit card, mortgage, or other loan. Experian says that BNPL loan information may factor into credit scores in the future, as new credit scoring models are developed. For now, though, while BNPL services provide a convenient way to spread out payments, consumers really shouldn't rely on them to develop a positive credit history. The most effective way to build credit is to apply for a credit card, pay your bills on time, and keep your balance to less than 20% to 30% of the card's limit. All right, on the bottom of page 14, we have calendar for July 2024. Number one, the year is halfway done, which means it's a good time to review whether your portfolio is still in line with your goals. For a look at how inflation, interest rate, and the upcoming election could affect the economy and the stock market during the second half of 2024, see our mid-year outlook on page 16. Two, July is bank account bonus month. Citibank is giving customers a $300 bonus if they open a checking account by July 8th and make two direct deposits totaling at least $1,500 within 90 days. Chase is offering a $300 bonus until July 24th for customers who make direct deposits of $500 within 90 days. We have a deal of the month. Whether you want to outfit a college student's dorm room or upgrade your own bedroom, July is a great month to buy bedding accessories, says Julie Ramhold, consumer analyst with DealNews.com. Watch for discounts of up to 50%, especially during Independence Day sales. And 15. Retailers such as Target and Amazon commonly hold sales this month. Be on the lookout for deals on furniture, jewelry, and electronics. You can sign up for a 30-day free trial of Amazon Prime if you want to continue your membership. The fee is $139 a year. A Target Circle 360 membership costs $99 a year. Both services offer free delivery of online purchases. And to the right side of page 15, we have Better Than a Toaster, the right way to write a check for a wedding gift. A cash gift is nearly always welcomed by newly married couples, particularly those who already have all the appliances they need. But if you plan to give the couple a check, make sure they'll be able to cash it. Some tips: verify their names. While it's still common to celebrate a wedding by congratulating Mr. and Mrs. Smith, only about one-third of never-married women say they plan to take their spouse's name, and the tradition often doesn't apply to same-sex marriages. And even if one newlywed takes the other's last name, the timing of getting legal documents and bank accounts updated may not align with the timing of your check. One way around this problem is to address the check to just one of the newlyweds, perhaps the one you're closest to, and write "wedding present" in the memo line. Watch your conjunctions. If you write a check to newlyweds using both of their names with an "and" between them, for example, John Smith and Jane Pierce, it's likely that both will need to endorse the check in order to deposit it. And some banking institutions may be stringent in checking identities or requesting a joint account to deposit it. However, if you write their names with an "or" between them, John Smith or Jan Pierce, either could deposit it, says Maribel Ferrer, a spokesperson for Chase. All right, I'm going to skip over that really long article because I don't think we have enough time for that. So, resuming on page 26, we have how to reach your investing goals. Patience helped these four investors make their portfolios work for them. Article by Kim Clark. It can feel discouraging to keep sacrificing as you wait for the miracle of compounding to work its magic and accumulate enough to buy a house, pay for college, or fund your retirement nest egg. But ordinary people who have attained such goals, and more, are everywhere. Call them the successful investors next door. They succeed in a variety of ways, but all employ some key strategies for staying motivated and investing wisely. If you are saving for a specific goal, in other words, something more concrete than just a bigger portfolio, you've already taken a crucial step towards success, says Daniel Crosby, author of several books on behavioral finance, including the forthcoming The Soul of Wealth. Research shows that investors who tie their financial lives to a why, to a purpose other than just investment performance, usually save more and are dramatically less likely to sell in bear markets, he says. They report greater life satisfaction, and they have more fun. Crosby is serious about the fun part. Successful investors must be disciplined and patient, he says. One way to motivate yourself to stay on your long-term track is to take a moment to really celebrate your investing victories along the way. To help you make it to your own celebrations, we asked investors who recently achieved one of their investing goals to share their stories. As you'll see, they used different investing strategies, and they made some mistakes. But with learning, perseverance, and sometimes a little luck, they are now enjoying their investing wins. Welcome home. When she was in her early 40s, Patricia Savu decided to start saving up so that she could eventually help her daughters buy homes. That was a challenge for Savu, who worked as a chemist for 3M. She had a PhD in chemistry, but didn't know much about finance. My father didn't think that was the kind of thing girls should know about, explains the 71-year-old retiree. Early in her working life, she stinted on contributions to her workplace 401k plan. But more than 10 years into her career, she started reading copies of the Wall Street Journal that a colleague had been leaving in the break room. As she read about the benefits of portfolio diversification, she began to worry that the outsized stake in 3M stock she had accumulated, thanks to her annual option grants, made her family's finances too dependent on the fate of that one company. By that time, she was vested in the company pension, and she had upped her 401k contributions, invested in broad market funds, to the maximum. So, for her house fund, she started a habit of regularly cashing in her stock options to diversify into technology companies that her husband, an electrical engineer, admired, such as Amazon, Apple, and Google, now Alphabet. Those stocks did so well that Savu became a fan of tech and growth-oriented stocks in general, although she's a little leery of current valuations. Over time, she broadened her tech portfolio by adding low-cost exchange-traded funds such as Fidelity, NASDAQ Composite Index, and Technology Sector Select SPDR. Those funds have both returned an annual average of more than 16% over the past 15 years. Last year, when her younger daughter got married and started looking for houses near Savu and her husband in St. Paul, the parents realized they could afford more than a down payment. The tech-heavy house fund had done so well, they could cash out $420,000 and buy outright the home her daughter's family chose, and still leave at least an equal amount for their other daughter. Savu owns the property, and her daughter and son-in-law pay a well below market rent into a dedicated account to cover taxes, insurance, and maintenance. Savu's daughter will inherit the home, as well as whatever is left in the rent account, when Savu passes on. Meanwhile, the house is much bigger and nicer than one her daughter would have been able to afford on her own. "It makes me feel good to be able to do this for her," Savu says. You always hear about people buying and holding, but you have to have an exit strategy if you want your investments to have an impact, she says. Strategy: diversify beyond company stock. Next, we have open for business. Miles Gage, 30, says he was a sneakerhead during his later years as a student at the Ariel Community Academy, a K-8 public school on the south side of Chicago. He loved learning about finance at the school, which was co-founded by the mutual fund company Ariel Investments. He joined the junior board of directors of the school's investment club, which manages a portfolio of $20,000 for each class year. At year end, the graduating students divide half of the fund's profits among them. When Gage was 12, to get him thinking about his future and build a college tuition fund, his mother made him combine his two passions. Whenever he spent money saved up from his birthday to buy a new pair of Nikes, he had to buy a share of the company's stock too. He was soon buying Apple shares because he loved his iPod. And he bought a few shares in other firms he admired, such as Tesla and companies he thought served crucial functions, such as healthcare company Johnson & Johnson. Gage, who got to meet Warren Buffett as a kid, says, "I was following Warren Buffett's advice. Own businesses of quality that you spend your money with, that you would want to own forever." Scholarships and loans paid for his finance degree from the University of Illinois, so Gage rededicated his investment fund to support an entrepreneurial dream. He and a friend wanted to start a company that would help youngsters learn about finance. In early 2019, just before his 25th birthday, Gage quit his day job as a banker and started using his investment fund to pay his living expenses while he helped build the business. He liquidated almost all of his portfolio, by then worth $45,000. He figures he put in about $8,000 into the portfolio, and he says it benefited from especially strong returns from Nike, Apple, Tesla, and Johnson & Johnson. Cashing in the stocks, and even selling some of his beloved collector Nikes, to invest in his business was totally worth it, he says. His company, Rapunzel, which sells personal finance curricula to schools and offers a free stock trading game app, is growing. When he's presenting an investing lesson to students, Gage likes to point to students wearing Nike shoes and say, "Thank you. You are paying me because I own Nike stock." That often makes an impact. Once they understand they could be putting that money in their own pockets, a light goes on. And they get enthusiastic about investing, he says, just like he did. Strategy: buy what you know. Next we have, off to college. When his older daughter was 6 years old, Michael Hirsch, now 51, decided it was time to start saving for her and her sister's college expenses. Though he was living in Southern California at the time, his fee-only financial advisor, Delia Fernandez, recommended that Hirsch start a tax-advantaged 529 college savings account with Nebraska's NEST program because it offers low-fee options managed by respected fund managers such as Vanguard. Parents can use the money from any state's 529 to pay for any accredited college. To make sure they reach their goal, Hirsch and his wife automated their investing as much as possible. They set up twice monthly automatic withdrawals from their checking account, and they chose age-based funds that would automatically rebalance and transition to safer investments as each child's college enrollment date neared. As that time approached for their elder daughter, Fernandez pointed out that Hirsch had built up enough in other liquid savings that he could afford to take more risks with his college fund, in hopes of realizing a little extra growth. The Hirsches increased the 529's stock allocation, shifting money into Vanguard stock index funds. With the regular contributions and extra deposits from bonuses or other windfalls, Hirsch says he has contributed about $80,000 for each girl. The account's combined total peaked at about $215,000 before withdrawals began. With scholarships, his daughter's summer jobs, and the 529's, Hirsch figures they can now fully fund both daughters' college expenses, especially since his youngest daughter expects to attend an in-state public school in their new home state of Washington. Setting aside that money early on did hurt at first, Hirsch says, but when you don't have that money in your account, you don't even think about it after a while, and it has been worth it. My university experience was so important to shaping who I am today, and the same was true for my wife, Hirsch says. Knowing that we are able to provide that foundational and impactful experience for our kids means everything to us. Their strategy? Make saving automatic. Next we have getting help. For the first 35 years of his working life as an attorney and Washington, D.C. lobbyist, Mike House, 78, funneled his retirement savings into what he thought were safe bond funds in a Fidelity account. "I am very conservative in my investing outlook," he says. "I thought the money was really safe in bonds." But as he and his wife, Gina Rigby House, started to plan for retirement, House began to realize how paltry the returns on bonds were. He feared he might not be on track to do the kind of traveling and charitable activities he was hoping to do in retirement. So House sought the help of a financial advisor. "I know how to do my job and make money. I don't know how to invest money," he says. A business associate recommended Ted Shanahan, founder of Blueprint Financial Group in Reston, Virginia. Shanahan explained that House was so focused on ensuring the return of his principal that his investments had exposed him to other risks, especially the loss of buying power due to inflation. It took some persuading, but eventually Shanahan maneuvered House's portfolio into a well-diversified basket of investments that has ranged between 60% and 70% stocks. The new portfolio averages an annual return of more than 6%, more than double the return on House's original bond portfolio. House, semi-retired for 5 years, now has an eight-figure net worth that enables him and his wife to follow their passions. He still does some consulting, but the couple are preparing to move back into their home state of Alabama. Their investments give them the time to do volunteer work for their alma mater, the University of Alabama Law School, and enable them to afford frequent trips to see family across the country, as well as some bucket list European vacations, says House. It's a lot of fun. Their strategy? Consult a pro. And that's going to be it for this installment of the Magazine Rack. I've been reading the July edition of Kiplinger Personal Finance. I'm Michael Prinz. So long, until next time.